The Oddball Show, a podcasting collaboration from Creepy Live Production and Oddball Magazine.
Greetings, all you particles and waves. This is indeed the Oddball Show. My name is Prof. I represent the J.P. Lime side of this chemistry experiment, and I'm here to help steer on this voyage of inner space. I'm joined on this and every Oddball Show hour by the original Oddball himself, founder and editor-in-chief of Oddball Magazine, dopest poetry magazine this side of the Aegean Sea, the man with the master pen, Mr. Jason Wright.
Oh, man. I don't know. I had a dream the other day that you said the same exact thing to me.
I had a serious feeling of deja vu as I opened it up.
So weird. It was like the whole Aegean Sea thing. I don't know. I had a pepperoni pizza before and a Monster energy drink, and I watched 13 Reasons Why, and I know it was like it was triggering, and now I had this vision that you were going to say something on Aegean Sea and Master Pen. So
I mean, I know we've done a lot of these Oddball shows, but I feel your feeling of deja vu.
Dude, was it a probing? Was there a probing involved? Like, I've had dreams, okay?
Maybe I was in your dream.
Maybe this is a dream.
That's weird, man.
I'm tripping.
Well, this is the Oddball Show. Thanks for being here, bud. How's your Sunday so far?
Not bad. I had a sub from Boulevard Pizza. Shout out to Boulevard Pizza. It was okay. So I was kind of lacking. But
you can't shout somebody out and tell them their food isn't good. You can't do that.
I think the Celtics
shout out your food was okay. that's not doable.
They don't know what boulevard in North Alabama.
True. It could be any boulevard, literally any boulevard in America, because we're on the internet. So you could be anywhere, man. You could be broadcasting from anywhere.
I could be broadcasting from the moon.
From the moon, which you know we kind of are.
Which makes sense because we have an interesting. We have an interesting character on the show tonight, don't we?
In fact, let's get right to him. Now that you bring him up, let's mention him. Thank you for his time. To label our guest tonight in a single word, one would simply call him a poet. But as with many great artists of the century and beyond, his work pushes against the boundaries of the written word and page. You may have caught a performance by his band Funk Physics, which combines spoken word with a three-piece band. You may have tuned into his long-running radio show on Wesleyan University's WESU entitled The I Do Not Know Show. Or you may have experienced his poetic stylings through any number of online and local poetry hubs, including but not limited to both Stone Soup with Chad Parento and Oddball Magazine, as well as his independent publishing outlet, Press 22 Publishing, where you may right now find selections from his The ID, the Inkless Dialogue Spoken Word album. It's our pleasure and privilege to have him join us for a discussion on a topic that's become somewhat central here at The Oddball Show, the active and real life of an artist today. How one achieves and measures success within that life, and the creative legacy one aims to leave behind. The spoken mind poet, here to speak on time and age and home and dreams, please welcome C.C. Arshagra.
C.C.!
Hello, people.
Thanks for being here, man. We really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Every bipedal step of the way.
it's not as easy as pressing record now, is it? But you know, it's fine. I mean, it's still, we're here, you know, we're here, we're live, we're in color.
What I call divine imperfection.
Exactly.
Right, exactly. So we broadcast live through the power of the internet through Google Hangouts. And sometimes that goes very well and it's very user friendly. And sometimes we run into problems. You know, that's just the way the thing works. You got to keep it rolling. You can't let a little setback get you down, so we really appreciate
it. It wasn't a setback, and it wasn't a problem. Everything was meant to happen. You know what I'm
saying?
That's right.
You know what? If I learned one thing from the rap rock era is to keep rolling, rolling, rolling.
Did you just quote Limp Bizkit?
I did.
Oh, all right, cool. I'm pretty sure that's a first for you, bud.
Definitely. So, I mean, I have quoted Limp Bizkit in the past, but, you know, not in this show and probably to myself a million years ago.
Cause it is it's like an amp up. You got to keep rolling, man. So I can understand why you say that to yourself.
I also do it all for the nookie.
which is, you know, also a good life motto, you know?
Yeah, I mean, basically, Fred Durst has taught me how to live my life.
He's the poet of our century, really.
I pop my shirts up.
No. Who was the poet of your century?
No, he's certainly not. I was indulging Mr. Jason talking about Limp Bizkit and Fred Durst.
Yeah. Okay, because I'm ignorant here on this one.
You want to stay ignorant on it. that is a powerful position. Given
I love being schooled, though. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
It's not like you're missing out on the gems of the musical times.
Part of the topic of this show.
Yeah.
The power of the word and who has it.
Right.
Let's dig in a little bit to where you guys, you, Jason, and you, Cece, first met and ran into each other. You now know each other fairly well, but we have a number of different pieces from your artistic career, Cece, to talk about, different projects that you have going on now and some that have built to where you are. The one that I really wanted to kick off with is the I Do Not Know show, which is your long-running radio show. What was the whole essence, and where does that awesome name come from, and how did Mr. Jason Wright become part of it?
That's a good introduction. That's a good place to begin on many notes. I was driving a truck at the time, and I was, for the first time in my life, my percentage of the time I was spending as an artist and the time I was spending making a living in a job, what I call a job, was probably 90-10 or even higher, working all the time, not being an artist. And so I couldn't stand that anymore. And so I started to press record on my phone, which was a Galaxy 3 at the time, which I could plug because they don't live there anymore. They're dead. So, and I ended up making these things, and I ended up walking into an art gallery in upstate New York, and there was this woman there, and I said, "Hey, listen to this thing I just made." Only 8 of them existed at the time. And it was about painting. And so I pressed play. I looked around the gallery. I took my little lunch break. I got back in. Before I left, she said, "Why don't you send me those, and I'll include you in my next show?" And I'm standing there in the gallery, and I look around. It's a visual art gallery. And I go, okay. No. She sees me. She goes, "I got an iPad. on the wall, and instead of looking at the art, people can touch it." So within 30 days, I created over 100 pieces, packaged them, marketed them, brought them into a studio, came up with an entire concept. And in the meantime, I ended up booking a poetry reading. So while the ID Inkless Dialogue poems were being born, I ended up booking a poetry reading at a bookstore downstairs from the Hold on, I got to take a minute.
What?
Hey, podcast live on the radio. I
got to
go.
CC live on a call, live on the radio.
Wow.
So I had to take that and tell her. That was Sherry.
That's great. That's awesome. That's
Sherry from up north.
It's like waving at a friend when you're on news. You know?
I love it. I had to do it. I could not let it go. I figure it's all good live.
Right,
so on. I booked myself in the summertime while this is happening at the bookstore downstairs from the radio station. The radio station sends me upstairs to plug the gig. And I end up on Jay Cherry's Voice of the City. Jay Cherry invites me back, and I end up with her on a fundraising show to that year's president. And he said, "You'd make a good DJ, but you got to take the test." So now it's December, January. I take the test. And sorry, this is a long story, but this is how it happened.
Great.
And so I take the test, and when I'm done with the test, he goes, "Okay, what do you want to do? What's your show?" And I literally stood there. I didn't know I had to pick one right away. So I said, I literally stood there and said, "I don't know." And then in there, the proverbial light bulb over my head appeared. And I said, "The I Do Not Know show," because there's the FCC rules. When I didn't know about the radio, what you can and can't say on radio, even in free form. And so if I didn't know what I was saying, I could say anything because I don't know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Plus, I'm a big fan of the unknown and nothing. And, you know, a lot of poets, they delve into, you know, the subjects of death and the end and unknown and the ineffable, you know?
Yeah.
So
that which you cannot say.
That which cannot be named.
The Voldemort.
Cannot be said. So So I go on the air after all that in April of, I think, 2012 now. The CDs exist, and I sit there, and I break out Blind Faith, and I play Do What You Like. So I'm sitting there, and I say, listen, is there anybody out there in the world, because it's a 1,000-watt radio station.
Yeah.
I mean 6,000 watts, which is a good signal. Springfield down to maybe across Long Island, all along the Connecticut Valley. It's for a college radio station. That's a yeah. signal. So I ask, is there anyone out there that cares about the children of tomorrow? Because we're basically leaving them this apocalyptic story, and we don't even care. Everyone's apocalyptic. I mean, how many more years of zombie vampire movies can we take? When I was young, there were genres in movies, and another genre came along, and it took, you know, but now it's like from the 90s on, it's like, how many more zombie vampires pilots can you come up with? So nobody called in over the first 50 shows except to tell me I was going to be murdered for talking on the radio because I'm telling the FCC where the fuck to go, you know, because I don't care yeah. if people don't get, because they, you know, and literally, so I said that, and just call anything, say anything to the kids of today, that if in 10 years, those born now and those born in 10 years, if anybody wakes up in 20 years and then we really leave them this shit pile, which we're well on our way of doing,
poison air,
poison food, and a poison water supply, we're doing really well. You know, give them something to say just so they know 10 years ago that we weren't asleep at the switch. So on that note, I kept going. And it, because I was on from 1:30 until 3 in the morning, it got a little more adult. And I started to do a little bit more fun there and push the envelope. And then I took those CDs that I made and I mixed them with jazz because there was a turntable, but they had a high-end CD player where you with a jog wheel. So I was literally cutting and scratching poetry while I was cutting and scratching Coltrane.
That is awesome.
That's cool.
And I was doing it, so I was mixing it live. And then if I liked the word, I had a mic in front of me and I was adding that. And then I brought in a bass player live, Derek Bossy, who's my guest every once in a while. And eventually toward the end of the 3.5 years, he brought in guest artists. And toward the end, this guy, Matt Beliveau, joined us, and the three of us, and then I got thrown off the air, which is too long a story, and it was just the shit hit the fan, and nobody wanted to take it, and I had to get spanked because they couldn't spank the guy who made a mistake, and blah, blah, blah. I was kicked off the air for 6 months, and I never went back. But in the meantime, I got 3.5 years, 156 shows in the can of experimenting, and toward the end, I was going almost all live experimental music with all original work for an hour and a half.
I remember listening to that, and I was like...
So the answer to your question, just to finish the story, is that I ended up calling in that time Chad Parento to be on the air. Chad couldn't make it, so I literally met Jason on the radio, and he was just a call-in, but he lasted for like a half an hour, an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how I met Jason.
Yeah.
It's a radio show.
Yeah, that was awesome. I remember listening to it like, all right, well, what the hell am I going to talk about? And then I was just kind of on air, and then we talked for, I mean, I remember because I was at my old house in Somerville. It was like 1 o'clock in the morning. I called. It was snowing out. It was like, wow. It was like just a surreal moment for me. It was the first time I was on the radio, and I was just like calling you and talking to you about, also, you interviewed me for like 30 minutes.
Yeah, up to an hour, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it went for a long time, and since then, we've kept in contact, and we've had actually like many conversations.
Yes,
about life, and you're a very enjoyable person to talk with, and it was a great connection.
And you gave me a reason to be on the radio because it's you, it's the person who has the artist within them that's trying to get out, but life beats us up. Reality beats us up. Survival beats us up. And being creative is an ideal beyond these realities of fear that are basically us. And so if you're afraid and you're at the edge of fear, I'm attracted to that as an artist and a being, because yeah. that means you're at that place in the pool with David Bowie talks about. You got to go into the pool. You got to go to that deep end, just where your toes don't touch, and you got to be right at that place all the time, and you know you're alive as an artist.
Hell yeah!
And so, definitely. So when you come in and you're vulnerable and your negativity is coming through you, and it happens to me still to this day. So it's easy to love other people. A lot easier is to love yourself. So yeah, I'm still working on that one. But I remember. Yeah. And I've been watching Jason, and you have grown, and you have developed, and you have become stronger as a person, as a poet, and as a your whole life has been nothing but uphill since that day, from my perspective. And
I know, and
it manifested in this, and now I'm,
you're on my show.
And I'm on your show. So now the goal is to get you thrown off the air.
I don't know if you can because it's the internet. So
I know. Well, I don't know. That's a good question because they're trying to close down the internet again. They're not going to give up.
That is true.
So if you want to segue into who's ruling the world.
Well, you know, I just want to go back to that moment when we were on the air, and you asked me some poignant questions, and you were like, you actually, I just remember it was really touching to listen to you talking, and then you asked me some questions, and did I read poetry on the air?
You may have, yeah.
I'm going to read some poetry on the air.
You were going to read one of. My memory's saying you were going to read one of Chad's because he wasn't.
Yeah.
Never happened.
I just had a
memory thing.
Yeah, I remember. Go ahead.
I could actually see if I have it, but I would have to open a thing in the back. I don't want to cause another audio.
No, don't do that. But we'll put it on the pertinent links, you know? So.
We'll see. I'll send it to you if you could edit it down and pull it out and you could use it someday.
I remember the music being, what the hell am I listening to? Which I really enjoyed because I was like, I was trying to like Shazam it and I was like, what is this? Like, who is this I'm listening to? And my wife was like, that's some interesting music.
So I'll send you the entire show episode because your name's in the title. I'm almost sure.
Yeah, no,
and I'll send it to you, and you could package it up into little bites and make it more desirable rather than try to, you know what I mean. You pull out the part you like.
It was 2012. I was going through a rough patch in 2012.
But I died so many deaths. See, that's the whole thing about art becoming an artist is you got to die a lot of good deaths, man. You really got to. Go to the end, and then you got to survive yourself over and over and over again.
Right.
You got to keep choosing art over and over again. That's why after I started doing this with my life, I used to tell people, whatever you do, don't want to be an artist. You know, what do you want to do? I want to be an artist. Don't be an artist. You don't. You're an artist. If you have to be, or you're dead, that's it. Whatever you're doing in life, if you're not making art, you are profoundly dead inside. Then keep making art because that's what you are. It's a calling, I think, more than it is a choice.
I feel like it's almost like an addiction that it's a matter of getting something out of yourself that you know or constantly addiction feeding a monster in you.
I think addiction is part of the transcendent story, the journey, the phases, the stages.
Yeah,
I think addiction is part of that because you have to still be accountable. Where if your addiction, it's like in the psychic world, there are channelers and they're tarot card readers. Now, there's nothing wrong with being intuitive and psychic and having a third eye and being able to understand, like a dog can hear a whistle that we can't. There's some people's minds that could hear a little bit them. But when you get into the addiction part, when you start believing your own shit.
Right on.
And then you don't know that you're really making choices all the time, but you delegate it into the future and the past and you leave the now. And the addiction means that you have now that you're living in the future of your own past, of your own believing your own shit, whatever the hell that means. But it gets pretty confusing and you can get lost in that world and your ego takes over. And that's when addiction happens because you think you're trying to satisfy it with a thing or an it. Or an ideal or an identity, when really it's just work. You just got to die and stop. Don't lie to yourself and make your art so it gets more and more true. So you know that between being born and dying, you didn't waste that time stroking yourself.
It's true, man. Yeah, yeah, no, I feel you.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, yeah, after that line, you feel me. Now we're in a new show. There you go.
But I think that's a really – That's a key addiction. I mean, a key distinction to make, you know, between something like addiction and really this thing that should be self feeding through its entire your entire life, that pursuit of art.
Right.
I like how you said between the timeline of being born and dying. What are you doing in between? And what you're doing in between is art.
Yeah,
and pushing the boundaries of physics, basically.
Oh, I gotta kick something right now. This is called All That Happens.
All right,
go ahead.
You can blame your mother for the way she weaned you. You could blame your father for the way he beat you. You could blame your sister for the way she teased you, and you could blame your brother for the names he called you. But I can't tell you. Oh no, I can't tell you all that happened in between. You could say it's over the first love that crushed you, or that all the hate you do is from the hate that raised you. Or you could blah, 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 blah. I forget. I'm doing this from memory. And then something else. Or you could blame, I got through six of eight lines.
I thought you were reading that. I was like,
No. I'm a terrible memory. I've written 10,000 poems. I could remember four. Because I live the blank canvas, you know. It's like I take my strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah,
I like the blank canvas.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I've written a lot of poetry too. I don't memorize because I've written so much. Might be a cop out for me.
No, it's the way you use your brain. It's like you take a downhill skier who's a gold medalist and you throw him in a pool and say, "You suck. You can't swim."
Yeah.
No, your brain's fine. We all use different sets of skills. You know, like to use the Diana Troy from the Star Trek episode. There's the guy with the brain, the guy with the muscle, the guy who's got second in command, the guy who's driving the ship. And then there's this girl that's standing there, and her job is, this is what I feel. You can't run the ship without the empath. You know, you're not broken. You're not stupid. You're not wrong. You're an artist. You're fucked. Wonderfully fucked. That's my favorite line. I call it the blessed curse. My friend Donna Green from up Boston way with a little cancer thing for kids, she calls it wonderfully fucked. Although she'll kill me if I say that because she's got a real clean rep, I think.
So you just call her out?
I just called her out. She's going to hate me now. I just lost a friend. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
We're good. She'll forgive me.
So we were talking about this you were getting into something that I think is really kind of central to what we're going to push tonight, is this idea of dying a lot of good deaths, and that as an artist, there's no way to, you know, that's what you have to do. So when something like, for instance, the I Do Not Know show, you know, goes its way into the ether, you know, that you can't help but have it end because that's what it's supposed to do. What does somebody like you, where do you then push your energy? Do you just look for a new door to walk through, or is it... You know, do you channel that into something else? Where do you go back to the well? How do you do that?
I had it was my first all live show. It was the first time I used two studios, A and B. I had a special guest who was first time on the radio ever, and she was going through a lot of stuff. Her name's Aurora now. She's over in Colorado, and I had Matt Bellavo and Derek Wassey in Studio B, and then it ended. So. Out of that is Funk Physics, because the three of us have said, rather than give up, let's just start doing the open mics. We got something. So we took it live into the open mic world where I came from. And eventually it became known as Funk Physics. And since I had a camera and everything was raw and everything was made up on stage, we videoed them. I ended up recording a dozen, two dozen or three dozen, whatever we did in 9 months. And picked about eight or nine of them, and friends came over and helped me put some video stuff together because I got a lot of tech things where I could do A, B, and G, but I'm missing. I need a friend to fill in the little.
Yeah, yeah.
So managed, between some help and that, we managed to put together a YouTube page. A friend of mine, Glow, got it going. Derek helped me put it together, and then that all happened. And so Funk Physics became a 9-month project. And then it ended up where our first show we did when I launched another new project called Open Art, where that's another story. But that dovetails to another story where I launched in Boston the Human Room and the Open Voice around 2001. So culture, not just from art, not just from the canvas, not just from the page, and not just from the voice and the radio, but also that the canvas of life. So one time when I was young, back before I was still in Stone Soup, people used to say, "What kind of an artist are you?" I said, "Well, if I had to pick a name, I would say culture artist." Because the, if you remember way back in the 90s, the open mic was a scene of the entire metropolitan Boston of about 300 people in a given week would go to an open mic, and there were three of them.
That's
and
crazy.
By the end of that 10 years, by 05 when I left around that time, it was about 30 a week and thousands of people going to open mics. And then I got the little award from the but then there's all these stories and politics and blah blah blah, but venues started popping up. And then when they did the awards thing, they asked me to host Building the Poetry Community.
Really?
Because I didn't give a shit about venue loyalty. I just wanted people to read. You know, that goes my name, my grandfather, having a voice. Nobody going to kill you for saying something. Hello. You could speak and no one's going to kill you. You know what a big deal that is? We are so unbelievably ungrateful as a species because we don't get that. You could speak and no one will kill you. After millions of years and thousands of years, Egypt just killed a guy for writing a poem for the first time in the history of, yeah. of Egypt.
Yeah, I heard about that, yeah.
They just killed a photographer because he took a picture of somebody over in the Israeli-Palestine conflict. The photographer took a picture, and they killed a photographer. Both Putin and America have been killing photographers and journalists, and they're, you know what's happening to the net. So now look back. How important is having a voice? And now they're going to try and shut the internet down again, take away net neutrality. How important? So the Human Room, the Open Voice, was a hybrid of the open mic.
Oh.
And Open Art was a brand new one that I started again. So these platforms exist, even though they never thrived and existed, because when Jason Berube and his friends opened up Mama Gaia's Cafe, it only lasted a year. But that's where the Human Room and the Open Voice came out of.
I love the names.
And what was the driving concept between the Human Room and the Open Voice?
The Human Room and the Open Voice driving concept was that people were asking me, why don't you do an open mic? Why don't you? And I didn't want to because people that were in it for their egos, they wanted to do it. And it was too many kings and queens.
Yeah, yeah.
Too many gods. Oh, you don't need definitely. You move to Boston and you're in the Boston area for 2 months as an artist. And the first thing that should come out of your mouth is, oh, my God, there's a lot of gods in this town.
Oh, my God, yeah. You're speaking the truth right now.
It's like, why don't they do it for the reason? Like, my grandfather had to run for his life at the age of 9, and he raised me with no concept of enemy, hatred, or vengeance. And he's a child genocide survivor orphan. His name was Arshak. I made up my last name on that. So that's where it comes from. So when I'm in the open mic, I'm doing, you could say this and not be killed. Never mind, you're going to be killed for being one of the other. Right. For being black, for being anything, for being Native American. 500 nations dead, murdered. I'm just talking to a friend, but does anybody know about the King Philip Wars? At the, you know, the King Philip Wars are huge. The Native, the savages.
And what are we, Native Americans,
now that we're becoming robots, only people who could afford to live like savages can afford to take their clothes off, go into the woods and mountains and hunt and fish.
King Philip, Franklin.
Yeah. No, not King Philip was a Pequot, not a Pequot. He was a Native American. Oh, geez, I'm gonna get shot.
Right, but it was a, was he in Massachusetts? Because there's
no,
a King
no,
Philip
no.
School.
He was a Pocasset Wampanoag from Rhode Island. The
Wampanoag, yeah, so that's why King Philip's cool. Yeah.
And his father died after Thanksgiving, when the king died, because they started slaughtering them all. And killing them all, and then making it against the law for them to pray, against the law for them to hunt, against the law. They couldn't do everything because they were savages. They weren't. It was indoctrinate as a Christian or die. That was it. So then there was a queen who was the king. I just met and actually I bought some art. Phoebe Legere has a new friend in my life. What a godsend across her path. What an incredible artist from the 80s and the 90s. Real. I hope she gets her ticket punched in a little while. You know, as far as, you know, I mean, I'm sure she's well known. She's been on and about. But I recently crossed paths with her. What an artist. So, you know, she's walked the walk, and I loved her paintings. And so it's the second time in my life I fell in love with, I bought original art with my dwindling life savings. It's really important to understand where we come from, because it's coming full circle. And I got too many stories. there's when the biodevastation rally happened, when 9/11 happened, I did that 12-foot fucking poem in the air. I did a poem 12 feet by 8 feet. I wrote it on the wall 2 days after 9/11 called where? Love Is Not Afraid. Now,
where?
They had to, in order to open Mama Gaia's, which is next to Cinderella's on Main Street and Main and Mass Ave meet.
Yeah.
It used to be a fork.
Remember? Yeah.
And now it's a little bit, you have to go around the little park thing. Well, before that, it was Main and Mass Ave on that corner. Now it's a restaurant.
Indian restaurant.
I think Bella Luna restaurant, something like that.
Yep.
So the cafe and the restaurant's there. But those two things were Mama Gaia's. And the room on the left, he gave me to launch the open room, the human room and the open voice. So your question was, what was the essence of it? And I got on a tangent because you're just waking up passions of stuff that, hey, you try to give to life. And if life doesn't bite and you got to go back to making food and shelter, it dies away. So the human room was instead of asking all my poetry friends, I asked none of them. I just went home, sat down and said, what can we do to hybrid the open mic? So I said, okay, so everyone can come in, and instead of it being poetry or music or anything, there was going to be a three-stage thing where stage one of an open voice venue was an open venue where you can go in and sign in like an open mic, and there'd be 10 or 12 slots, and that'd be blah, blah, blah minutes, and that would be the first 45 minutes or whatever. In the middle, I would invite nonprofits, community organizations, people doing work, sewing clubs, experimental art people, people who wanted to just talk about something that's not on the subject, inform people about food or anything, natural cancer, whatever they wanted to do. But it was an open mic for organizations and individuals with little groups trying to make a difference in the world. That was the meat of it. That part was booked, but it was open where they could sign into it and get a slot. And then the third part after that was people can get up and just tell a story from their heart about their life. Just a open testimonial. When I was young, one kid got, the best one was this guy got up and he said, "You guys don't understand us as young. We're not stupid. We know what we're doing." And he told us a story. And all this is sitting on 8mm in a can somewhere. My whole life is on 8mm in a can. And a Skiatore still pissed because I don't have his grand opening, his beautiful show that he did over in thing. Aldo Temperlini's is still sitting in a can when he did a thing. Now he's 86 years old. He's world fucking famous now. So, and these were my friends. You know, I would take my camera and I would go shoot stuff nobody else cared about when I wasn't doing my own. So that's the open voice. And then what happened is that during the open voice, something popped in each one. So I would take that event that the public loved in an open voice. And out of that is the only way to get into a human room event. Now, a human room event was a system where that the person doing it could take that idea and charge money so that they can make a buck or two. They would actually become a producer now. Now there would take. So what happened is that the people loved the activist poets. So one of the first human room events was called Artists, Poets, Activists. And I got seven hard-hitting activists, including Aldo and Askia and Brenda Walcott and Neil Callender and a few other people that were the political poets of that time in the scene. And at the end of that, I would add something even more weird that was music to close it down because it was usually heady. So that one event was the poet activist thing. And at the end of it was a woman who played Celtic harp while doing Rumi.
That's great.
And then there was this other one that I did that was another idea that was weird that came out of it. And then I did one where I sold tickets. And I got the guy that was the free form radio guy who had a news show called it's been a while. But he was on the Boston University radio. It's right on the tip of my tongue. I'll come up with it. And then there was a two people over at MIT who had a public community, you know, their own little democracy now. And then there was another guy at Tufts, and he had his own little radio show, and he was spitting out the news, right? These are three locals. So I put them on a panel, and I made these tickets, and I called it Who Shapes Public Opinion? Just to get people to think that they're being told what to think. Now I'm big time into the Hegelian dialectic. But the real thing is that went overboard and I couldn't even shut it down. 70 people showed up. And I did this without telling anybody except my activist friends. Then I realized that my passion as a poet was really in line more with that the activists were better artists than the poets because they were getting eaten alive by the entire concept of fame and popularity. And it was just not, they weren't able to break out of it because who was the best and who was the winner? And God bless all my spoken mind poet friends, spoken word poet friends who went into the slam world to beat each other to win. And it's like, no, I love you guys and you're fantastic and it's good art. But winning to beat, what's going on?
Right, right.
And then that whole energy became, and then I started being accused of being anti-slam. I'm not an anti-slam. I wrote a poem about it, and I brought it to Michael Brown. I had good art before I put it in my book. I wrote a critical piece. The AIDS poem wanted to beat the homeless poet. He wanted to beat him. You know what I'm saying? I'm an AIDS poet. Fuck you, homeless poet. I'm going to beat you. What the fuck is wrong with that? So I wrote this poem. He wanted to beat him. And they all wanted to get to the top. The somebody, the Illuminati word star, whatever the fucking word I used in the poem. I don't have it with me. But, you know, and I just wrote it. And it was called the Win-Win Poets. The Win-Win Poets wanted to be the best. They wanted to be in the company of the literati, word star, entertainer, blah, blah, blah. I think those were the opening lines. So anyway, so the human room was a hybrid. Now, anybody could take that model and go to any town, and I would try to create this thing so that it couldn't self-destruct. That's all I wanted to do is make something where you couldn't take slave songs, turn it into blues, turn it into R&B, and turn it into rock and roll, and turn it into Madonna, and turn it into Britney Spears, and turn it into the prostitution of humanity, the human voice. You see, it's really simple. You're going to say it, and you're going to be killed if you're not in line with the money. So who owns art? Who owns the voice? Who owns the microphone? And if you look at Congress, it's an open mic. Right? So, oh, man.
I don't want to slow the train down, man. You're on it right now.
You are one passionate motherfucker. Holy shit.
Yeah, we all have our faults.
But no. Go. I want you to finish that thought. Hold on. But then the human room, how did that end up not working out?
Mama Gaia's shut down. There were three guys, and they some sort of thing happened with investors. The investors, there were too many. I don't know what happened. I heard rumor stories. I can't say anything for a fact. But it was the only venue where it was supposed to be a community venue. They really had that. Jason Berube was a real passion behind that part of the vision. He was my friend. He's the one who called me and said, paint the poem Love Is Not Afraid. But then 9/11 happened. And then 2 days later, I'm like, Love Is Not Afraid. And I literally wrote a shitty poem, but it's the biggest poem I ever wrote. Literally. Because it was on. Nobody showed up. And then the biodevastation thing happened, and they put me on stage to open it because there were snipers on the roof. And then the activism just bled in, and I became an activist poet artist, and I haven't left since, as far as my passion. And I eventually just did as many open mics as possible. But I met a woman who was dying all the time, and I moved to Washington. Short story. And I moved to Bush was there, and I said I got to get out of town. So I went. I moved across the country to and other stuff happened. I went back into the upholstery, where I was an upholstery decorator for Beth Deer, who had a beautiful, one of the only African custom upholstery shops in Roxbury. I lived in Roxbury a couple times. I've moved 22 times in my life, but
22 times, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's totally not surprising to me. It's totally not like, I don't know. I keep trying to hit on exactly what I want to ask you about it, but it really isn't a question, right? It's that live wire energy, that idea that you do have to die, not 1,000 deaths, but you have to die a lot of good deaths, and you have to keep on rolling. So it makes it not surprising to me at all that you've moved 22 times, or that you, as soon as this, whatever came next after the human room was probably just as live and as full of. Because I think that model that you just described for the open voice in the human room is brilliant. I really do. I think that whole idea of sandwiching in businesses and enterprises and things that are nonprofit, people are trying to do things in between these art or kicking it off with art, doing those kind of enterprises in the middle, and then opening it up into an open testimony. I think that's brilliant. And then bridging that into the human room, I think it's brilliant. But to me, it's totally not surprising that you just kept on rolling. Then it was on to something else.
Yeah. So at the Swan Dive of Funk Physics, at the end of that, I produced, my friend has a club here. Well, it all started when I was a kid. I had my own business, and I closed it down, blah, blah, blah. The story's too long, but I wanted to throw a pizza in the air before I died. So I met Dolores Sullivan, and I worked at Lena's Pizza. Well, her son, Daryl, who's my friend now, And Dolores is still alive. She's retired. And she's still as beautiful as ever. But that woman she crossed the path of my life where I never forgot her. You know what I mean? It's like Netta Bolanski at the beginning of the very, very beginning of cable television in Hartford, HCT, when I was involved with the XYLA dance party. Probably the first popping, breaking, rapping TV show maybe in the country, outside of New York. On Access TV, when rap wasn't even allowed on MTV because it wasn't art.
Yeah.
So we had this show, and that's an interesting story. So that's when, that's when I got into contact improvisation and its very birth also. So I got involved in, which is now all over the planet, the movement art form called contact improvisation, if nobody knows about that. But that splits off into an art form that you could teach and study and learn and, Sanford Lewis just made a brilliant documentary about it after all these years called I'm going to think of the name, but I'll get it for your link and you can put it in there. People should support Sanford Lewis. He's from the north of Springfield, Hampton area. Made a brilliant documentary about the art form called contact improv at its essence, which what he did to describe that art form is what I try to do with my life to describe the open mic and free speech and having a voice in the world. So I really appreciated it. I made a little video of it. And then when the open art happened, I made a video for that too. So that's on YouTube somewhere. I can give you links to those things. So at least the idea was born, at least it was exercised, and at least the format exists. I might not be able to carry it out in my lifetime, but the seed of it is there. And that takes you back always to my grandfather, the garden, and his name and my soul. And how, no matter how I was raised, no matter whether anybody saw me or not, my grandfather gave me some sort of magic touch where he inadvertently gave me the concept of a lifetime when I was 5. He just kept saying, Papa's going to die someday. And I don't know what that fucking meant. It wasn't a bad thing. We're in a garden. I got a tomato. I got a cucumber. It's like I got a soda or whatever they have. He has wine and his whiskey and his water or whatever. He didn't drink, but he liked his whiskey and water at the end of a hard day. So that was it. But he kept saying that. And little by little, I realized, not till I was maybe 17 to 25, that I realized that what he gave me, that my entire childhood, I grew up looking at everybody, knowing that they were born and they're going to live and they're going to die. He gave me the concept of a lifespan with no negativity at an early age, simply by saying at these poignant moments, which I didn't even know what poignant was, and he just kept saying, Papa's going to die someday. Because he lost his father and he didn't even know when or how. He just had to go. Don't come back. 9 years old. He knew 7 languages, could read and write 4, and could read, write, and speak 3, and never taught me enemy, hate, or blame. So I don't know Native Americans, Jews, Palestinians, any indigenous people. The Poles got slaughtered over and over again. What happened with the Irish? Everybody, everywhere. Everyone's getting stepped on. Right now they're starving to death, people down in Argentina. You know, and it doesn't end. These are psychopaths at the top. We can't lose our voice. That's all we got. So it's really more important. It's art. It's not. I'm an artist. Look at me. The fuck is that? I don't understand it. Not from where I come from. You know, and I think the best part of this radio show is it got me to say die the good death instead of fight the good fight.
Die the good death.
I think that was born on this show, if ever. Die the good death.
That's die so the good dope. Death. I think that
it's not suicidal.
That simple idea that Papa's going to die someday is brilliant. It really brilliant. Is.
It is. I love Arshag Tarvayan.
Arshag. Man, that is awesome.
His first name. So I didn't want anybody to know my name. It's like, what? So what are you? Are you with this? Are you with that? So how am I going to pigeonhole you? So I would say, I'm from Earth.
Yeah.
They go, no, really, really. Tell me where you're from. What kind of name is Arshagra? And I go, no, really, I'm from Earth. I'm a bipedal. I'm a human being. I'm a soul in a body. I would keep answering it. And if you don't answer, eventually people will get more and more pissed and angry, and their tension will change. And they have to know, how am I going to hate you if you don't tell me what nationality or country or continent you're from? I can't pigeonhole you without this information. And
right.
Bleeds out of them, and it's ugly as shit. But I ended up getting a kick out of it because it really showed people's true color by not telling them. And that's not that I'm not proud of it. Everyone has their culture, their language, their color, their food.
But it's not all you are.
Their dance, but that's a gift.
Yeah,
it's a contribution to the spectrum and the canvas and the plethora of possibilities of who we are and how we dance and live and laugh and love. That's a beautiful thing, but not so I can hate you and put you on my pecking order because you're one of those from there and you practice that with them. What the fuck is that? That's my new line now. What the fuck is that?
What the fuck is that?
What's the acronym?
What the fuck is that show? What show is now? What the fuck is that show?
Episode 1.
There you go.
We are talking tonight with Cece Arshagra. It has been a very passionate and a wide-ranging discussion. But really, I mean, we're still hitting at the exact same point, aren't we? We're really digging away.
Never left home.
That's right.
I tell people, I don't care if we live on a ball in space, on a flat earth, or if it's hollow. I'm with the Petri dish people.
I'm with the Petri dish people.
Yeah, we all have a Petri dish on the head of a pin. Because it's all good. It's all about asking a question and not being afraid of answers. We just, 2 things changed my life in art and in science. And one was when they released the film, The Night of the Living Dead. I was 13 years old when I saw that. And I walked out and I'm like, wow, social impact. It was the first time I didn't feel alone. I was never happy walking out of Night of the Living Dead when I was 13, because it finally made sense that everybody is moving slow and all they want to do is come towards you. And if they get close enough, they'll start gnawing at you and eat you.
That wasn't fiction. That wasn't sci-fi. That was a metaphor for real. Like
that was
walk out the door. That was about to happen.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is Archie Bunker territory. Yeah. So, and then the other was when they came out with quantum physics, and it's like, okay, all of physics and science is wrong now. That's brilliant because it made more sense as a spiritual being. That when you slip out of one dimension and you add observation, that the perspective of time and space change and the rules are gone. You're wrong, Einstein. You know?
We're talking to CCS Chakra right now. We are having a conversation.
Go Tesla. Energy is free. Talk about it. Fuck putting a meter on everything. That's why they want to shut the internet down. We're becoming a slave race. I mean, I'm into this thing deep. Nanotechnology, huge. I'm into the nano hemp oil now. I'm looking into the science of this whole thing, the nano emulsification of food for bioavailability. I'm just recently getting into all this science now. It's like I'm writing these one-line poems.
You're dropping science, CC. You're dropping science.
I dropped a little science just now, yeah.
We're talking to CCR Chakra here on the Oddball Show, and we have a lot to talk about. We're going to get into the second segment in a bit, but let's go on and talk about what's going on at Oddball Magazine and JP Lime.
Okay, I'm going to mute. You call me back.
No, you stay on the phone. Stay on the phone. Okay.
Just going to do a quick break to talk about our second sites, and then we're going to come right back because I do want to kind of pull all these threads together into, you know, where does that lead you next? Where does that lead any of us next as far as, you know, what we need to do to be in line with the Petri dish? let's talk real quick about what's going on at Oddball Magazine and JP Lime. You want to go first or second, my friend?
Oh, man, I feel like this has been a storm of knowledge, and all I'm about to do is talk about my poetry magazine. But it's a great poetry magazine. But I love it. I love my poetry magazine. But, Prof, why don't you go on with what's going on at JP Lime, and then I'll finish up with what's going on with Oddball Magazine.
All right. So the Oddball Show here obviously is a collaboration between Oddball Magazine and JP Lime Productions. JP Lime Productions, we are your world with a crunchy hip-hop center. You can come find us at jplimeproductions.com as well as on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at JP Lime. We do a lot of different things at the site there. First of all, you can come and find our music. Both our albums, Blue Star Boulevard and Lime on the Rocks, are available for your listening pleasure there, as well as this episode of the Oddball Show, as we were talking about before, runs through the miracle of modern technology and the internet. So it is presently airing live on YouTube, as well as both Oddball Magazine and JP Lime Productions, as well as on our Facebook site. So there's a number of places you can listen to the Oddball Show.
And in the future, you'll be listening to it. Right now you're listening to it on YouTube. But in 2 days, you're going to be listening to it on iTunes because that's where it goes.
That's right. iTunes and Stitcher.
So that's where you might be listening to it right now in your car with a coffee culotta, listening to it, or you're listening to it on the YouTube or JP Lime right now. So
that's right. So then, in addition, at JP Lime this week, we have two new things going on. I'm putting up my second edition of Welcome to the Swamp, entitled. Oh, you okay there, bud?
Yeah, I got it. I got allergies. Thanks for calling me out on that, Prof.
No problem. I'm putting up my second edition of Welcome to the Swamp. It's entitled Give Us This Day Our Daily Briefing. We'll look at a fictitious, somewhat real-based administration and the leader and what they do to when they move the government down to a luxury resort in Florida. So come check out Welcome to the Swamp 2. In addition, my hip-hop duo Tyler Durden is set to take the stage June 9th. So we're going to be putting up a little bit of sounds from us. You'll see a poster up there for the site. I mean for the show, so you can post it on your calendars and such.
A live prof sighting.
That's right.
Oh my God.
So it's been a little while since JP Lime, the trio, has taken the stage, but Tyler Durden, the duo, is coming with some hip rock funk that, I don't know, I think people are really into it. We're really looking forward to our opening show. That'll be June 9th. That'll be in Natick. We'll talk a little bit more about that on the next show. But this week, check out a few sounds and other bits of info about Tyler Durden, and we'll pip you to where else you can follow us. But that's JP Lime this week. Come check us out at jplimeproductions.com. Jason?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm going to get this right. And that is what's going on at JP Lime. And you know what? I'm really excited about Tyler Durden. I can't wait to hear some of that music. I'm definitely gonna check it out live. Oh my God, yeah! I've been in the booth with Prof before, and Prof breaks it down. Prof already has the Doctor Strange He's like, you're a hustler, prof. You got a lot of stuff going on.
You got to keep that music flowing, man. You got to keep it going.
Got to keep it rolling, right?
That's a callback.
Yeah, that's what you call a callback. So that's what's going on at JP Lyon Productions. Check them out every single day at jplyonproductions.com. And, you know, this week at oddballmagazine.com, we had a great week at oddballmagazine.com. We, first of all, going on this week at Stone Soup, Toby Altman is going to be reading at Chad Prento's Stone Soup. And every Friday, we put up the Stone Soup service.
Yeah!
And we have a really great poem from Toby Altman. So that's what we had on Friday, along with our friend, the ever-intelligent Wise Words with Bruce Wise, which I think is the perfect name for that title of this series, because he's like the smartest poet I think I've ever met when it comes to cultural references, and the way he uses his poetry is pretty phenomenal. And then, you know, we had the Twist of Lime with America's Most Wanted, talking about Ice Cube's America's Most Wanted, the fabled Ice Cube album that really put him on the map when he kind of separated from N.W.A.
Yes, sir.
This is great. And then we have Janet Cormier's Bamboozled No More, a nice poem from Janet Cormier, a Somerville poet, artist. You know her by now if you've been listening to the show or you check out Oddball Magazine. She's our every Thursday artist. I love Liza's Eyes. I'll just say it. She's a wonderful person, and her poetry is phenomenal, and she's been great for Oddball Magazine. And I was just reading her poem, The Underground Garden, A Man's World by a Woman, and I really want to read it. Maybe I'd love to read this poem. It's so powerful. But I won't. And then we have It's All One Thing. James Van Loy is his weekly offering of poetry, history, politics, and sometimes even song. He doesn't usually break into song on our website, but he does live.
Danny Boy.
Yeah. He does live.
James is a beautiful human being. He's been around for a while.
Absolutely. And he's been a mainstay at Oddball Magazine now for a good couple of years, and we love him over at where we're at. And then we had two, you know, every Wednesday you can submit to Oddball Magazine, and Chad will put you up. And we put up Jeff Weisel with artwork by Alex Dunzing. He's a new artist that we've been featuring a lot lately. And then also we had the poem by C.M. Crockford with new photography by Jennifer Matthews. I think she's going to be in more and more involved with Oddball Magazine. And then we had the comic strip, The Odds, and Tuesday with me, I had my poem Meditation Lights, which I'll read at the end of the broadcast, and our good friend Fleming's Bobrin with the Epic Autism Report, talking about New York drivers versus Massachusetts drivers, which is a pretty big difference, as he lays it out in his Epic Autism Report. So that's what's going on at oddballmagazine.com. Check us out. Every day we have new material, and I want to give a big shout out to Chad Parenzo for making it all possible. He is
the man who says Naz.
The man who says Naz. CP3. He's the best.
CP3.
So that's what's going on at Oddball Magazine, and tomorrow you'll be able to check out the Oddball show there as well. So, yeah, that's what's up.
Awesome. That is what's going on at our perspective sites. Please come check us out and be part of what we got going on. As we do tend to when we're having a good time here in the Oddball Show, the hour tends to fly right by us. So we're going to extend just a little bit on this Oddball Show hour, because I do want to get into the second half and talk a little bit about how we sum up some of the threads that we were throwing out in the first half. And it'll have Jason close out with this jagged thought. But Cece, I want to mention a quick subject that we haven't talked about just yet, although it does kind of...
Hello, Cece.
I'm here.
Guess what I wanted to talk to you about.
I'm so sorry. I stepped on my own mic.
Did you do that thing again where you step on the mic?
Yep. I muted myself. I was sitting there having a whole conversation with myself.
All right. Well, okay.
So here, well, I'm going to reiterate. But you, as go it does happen here at the Oddball Show, when we're having a good time. Divine imperfection.
That's the way it comes to be.
And I think that kind of defines us here at the Oddball Show.
One of my songs.
Absolutely.
The lyric called Divine Imperfection.
But, Prof, what were you saying
about
the
way it will come to be?
Well, as it does happen when we get going here at the Oddball Show, the hour tends to zip right by us. I do want to extend just a little bit into the second half before we get to your jacket thought. I want to talk about, you know, a couple of things about pulling some of these threads that we mentioned in the first half together.
Right.
One of the topics that we have not yet mentioned but kind of plays into the other ones is the idea of being an autodidact. And it's something that you mentioned to us that you feel very passionately about, that you want to go on to be a lecturer about, and I want to talk a little bit about why that lecturing is such a passion of yours. But the idea of being an autodidact, and that, is there any other way to do it? Like, is there
exactly?
Art is such a lifelong pursuit, is there a different way to do it? Dive into that a little bit.
I'm working with that one artist that I've told you about, Matt Bellavo, and he was studying jazz guitar over at Central Connecticut State University, and he got out, and he was one of the only artists I ever met that didn't have to wait, you know, go from 20 to 40 before they could start being an artist, you know, to unlearn everything they learned.
Yeah.
So if you're lucky enough to make it through the process of being taught tools and technique, but right away out of the box, you already know you can invent from scratch, and that's all they are, is tools and technique. You still got to be your own voice. You still got to create your own sound. You still got to, you know, build your eyeballs from scratch. You know, and that usually takes, they say, when you don't start being an artist till you're 40, because it takes that long for you to forget everything you've ever learned. And that's also a very similar process that the autodidactic or self-taught, which is the way that I knew the word until I learned it. Autodidactic and self-taught, I think, are all one and the same. Mm-hmm. But you're lucky if you're an artist and you could just jump into the blank canvas of this is your life. And this is your these are mediums. That's all they are. You don't have to be a better painter than you are a better poet. You know, you don't have to put Shakespeare in a ring with anybody, any other great filmmaker, and to beat each other up to see which one's better. First of all, they're in different mediums. You know, it's like, you know, who's better, Picasso or Rembrandt? Let's put them in a ring and see who kills each other. There's no reason. You should adore when another artist next to you does something that inspires you. There is no competition. That's bred into us because we're taught that there's the God without, and the God we're drained of our own power we're born with, and we spend our lives trying to get the power we were born with because someone told us it's out there, now come and get it. This is how we enslave ourselves 101. So the autodidact thing is what I want to do is that I really think that there's a lot where no matter what medium, no matter what art, no matter whether you're an artist or a not artist, whether you go into business, your life is a creative process. And because I've spent my adult life doing this, I would like to talk to people in any situations. I could talk to a class, a lecturer in science and bring in what's in, because I was literally flown when I was living in Washington. First of all, it started when I stepped off the stage at the biodevastation rally. I ran into a woman who really appreciated that I opened the thing with a poem about not shooting people for making love in the street. It was an a cappella poem I sang, the biggest crowd I ever had in Boston on the Trinity Park there. And then there was the march down the street and all that, and speakers from around the world. And it was a 3-day conference, and the media said, you know, the next Seattle, everybody stay home, it's going to be violence. 2.5 days, no arrests, nothing. They had snipers on the roof of the library, on the Copley Hotel, and on the building next to it. They had the independent media people inside the Universal Church over there. And then they had horses, and they had cops and motorcycles and guns, and everybody was there with puppets. They took away the puppets at the IMF World Bank later on, where I got involved with the same guy that built the stage. So there's all these stories that I'm – there's so many tangents, because when you start living as your life in the arts and your arts in your life and the canvas and the autodidact, it all bleeds together. You're just living every day. You're just becoming alive and doing alive and working with alive, and not letting the lies that are being told to us dictate how we think and feel, to pick between blue and red so we can go vote on a machine that can be flipped. You know, think for yourselves is big. So I think I could talk to scientists. So when I was out in Washington, because I opened up the whole thing, the very next day they introduced the genetic bill of rights. We had in Massachusetts a genetic bill of rights because the science was new. I drove cab for 10 years and horse for 10 years. And while I was driving cab, people came in from all over the world for the project that was happening over just outside Boston there, where they were mapping the human genome. So I talked to all these scientists over and over and over again. And I'm telling you, cab driving, you learn a lot. If you get good at asking questions, you learn a lot. They'll tell you more than their wife knows, some of their husbands know, or sometimes. So that came together with my art, my activism, and the human room and the open voice. All these things merged at the same time. So it didn't matter what the medium was. It mattered that you had a voice. So when I moved to Washington, that project of the genetic bill of rights, and the woman that I met when I stepped off the stage, Martha Herbert, who was the head of the Council for Responsible Genetics. Her and Ralph Nader's sister were the ones that drafted. They were the chair and co-chair of the Council for Responsible Genetics. And I had a magazine called Gene Watch right over in north of Boston there by Porter Square. I don't know if they're still there, but Gene Watch Magazine, Council for Responsible Genetics. I don't know what happened to them now. Sheldon Krimsky is the co-chair, last I heard, or the chair. I think he still is. And I heard it's gone over to the international protocol and it's washed away. I don't know if it's in the news. But we had these 10 bullet points, and I wanted to put them on a canvas because the artist friend of mine, Alan Nidell, who used to have the Zeitgeist Gallery over in Somerville. Remember Alan? Remember the Zeitgeist? They moved a couple of times. Anyway, so you guys don't remember that. Okay, that's before your time then.
Sorry, man. Yeah. I didn't want to say it was before my time, but it definitely is.
Yeah, no, it's cool. It's cool. Out of the Blue and was another gallery, but there was another one called The Zeitgeist. Alan Nidell and Carol, his wife, ran that. So it's called the Lily Pad now. It was there.
Oh, all the right, Lily Pad. Yeah, that exists.
Before the Zeitgeist needed a piano, and the piano came in. Before you know it, the guy with the piano ended up running the whole thing. I think it was his house, and they – life goes on. So anyway, Alan ended up in Lowell. He ended up on the West Coast. Now I think he's – I forget where he is. He might be living with Buddha. But anyway, the story that I'm trying to tell is that the autodidactic, the being taught. So I ended up with the Council for Responsible Genetics and being met – coming off that stage and being introduced to science and technology and the cab driving and the human room and the open voice. And then I moved and I met Mariam Maradian, and I told her I wanted to do this painting project, and I had it started and I had the idea and I had the 10 blank canvases, and she was a painter. So we did the paintings, and so years went by. And so I called Martha Herbert and she said, I'm going to be meeting with Sheldon. He's the new thing. So he met, and then other people got involved. Kathy Sloan from West Hartford got involved. She was working. And she ended up flying me in the paintings, and it's the only time they've ever been seen in public. And I got to speak at a conference called the Database and Race Conference. They asked me to bring – they flew me out, put me up at the Chelsea Hotel, and gave me 15 minutes to speak to a room full of the top scientists from around the world. And it was the role of the artist. What is the role of the artist in science, academia, legislation, the senators were supposed to be there. Some of the top scientists of genetics were there. And there were five different things. And I also wanted to add, it was Kathy Sloan's idea, I believe, and she pitched it, and Sheldon said, yes, what about bringing CeCe in the paintings? And he could talk about the role of art in science. And media was the other one. And there was another one, television, I think, and film and art. And what is the role of the artist? So in that 15 minutes, I told about the paintings and Mariam, because I don't even know if she's alive anymore. But we were together for 2 years. It's a long, very heartbreaking story. I feel sorry for anybody dealing with DID. It's mind-boggling, to say the least. But anyway, so shout out to Lydia. That's another, you know, Lydia was a 10-year-old girl that was part of the story. But anyway, so I had to do that for posterity here. So anyway, it's all coming together, the autodidact, the role of the artist. So I wrote this. It's on YouTube. 3 years later, they put on YouTube. I have a video of me reading an excerpt from The Constitution of the Role of Art on Earth. I mean, I just like big things. So I wrote a constitution for art to get along. What the fuck? I gave it a shot, right? You might as well think big. So I drafted that out, and I read it. After it's a little 15-minute video you can watch on YouTube. You Google my name and the Genetic Bill of Rights, and you should come up with that. And that's hard to sell too, because the politics are still shutting it down. Monsanto should be in jail, and you ask me, that's mass murder. And it makes Hitler seem like a guy with a pea shooter. That's my 911 opinion of my own. I could be wrong. Don't shoot me. I'm just a piano player. But yeah. So autodidactic. I want to go to school and say, what are you doing with your life? Do you understand that you are a creative process? Your life, your every next thought is your medium. You could bring art to science. You could bring art to manufacturing. You could bring art to technology, to business. You don't have to settle for this Ford Motor Company Brave New World thing, where we come out of a petri dish, and now it's like they found the gene to shut off genitalia. Barbie and Ken, if that's true, were not dolls, they were role models. Imagine you don't even have genitalia, you're the perfect consumer. You know, and then there's all these weird shit that's going on, and I love it all. You bring me every conspiracy theory. I'll love it to death. If it's, because inside every one of them is a truth no one's telling. They're not crazy. They're not mad. If you saw an alien, you saw an alien. Admiral Byrd did, and he was the head of the whole thing. The whole thing. And then there's South America, and Antarctica. And it's if you ask enough questions and you're not told to shut up and you're stupid, you're the artist of everything you do. That's quantum physics. There's two more levels of physics coming along, they say. There's two more levels of bacteria. There's singularity. You see, I want to go into schools and ask people, do you realize that I spent my life being and becoming who I am and what I am? And that is a creative process, and I would love to do that. And I think everyone should benefit from not thinking there's only one way of thinking, not knowing there's only one way of knowing in any school of thought. And so
artists
are good at that. And I think we should start embracing those crazy people around us. I'm crazy.
If you ask enough questions, you are the artist of everything you do. I fucking love that.
Did I say, who said that?
You just did a second ago.
Good thing you pressed record.
I'm taking little notes here, because so in addition to we're gonna have a pertinent link section up on the site with the podcast, you know, to make sure that we get all the various things we mentioned. But we'll be talking a lot about this on our various social media sites. So I try to keep a little running tally here of some of the things that we've been jotting, and I've been jotting feverishly tonight. There's quite a lot. We are coming down to the end of the hour here, and I think that's a pretty good thought to end on.
Well, why don't you guys come in? Because I mean, I know I'm trying to tell these giant stories, and I'm trying to pack, you know, a novel into a 5 or 10 minute story, and
I love it. It's great.
A big circle, but I'm trying to bring them back home to where the question started. And I'm trying to do you some justice here and not be accused of being long-winded in any way, because you can't be shallow. You can't be shallow about these big ideas. You need to understand that, you know, that the autistic kid can hear and see and think everything.
Right.
It's just not coming out their mouth.
Right.
Same with the deaf and the blind. We could learn from that. In the past, there's villages in Africa and stuff like that where they tell stories where they don't ostracize those that are different because they're not marching to the one drum. So what do you guys feel about that? Well, you guys got dreams? You guys got visions? Why don't you let me pass this energy into you, and what do you got? Because I know that both of you are making a difference up there, and you got your podcast and whatever else you do, but what's your visions? Why don't you let me throw you that one and be quiet for a while. Why don't you take it home?
Oh, all right. My vision is, I have a mental health condition, and I want to end mental health stigma in the world. I want to make a difference before I'm gone. I think everyone wants to do that. I think I want to leave a legacy, but I want to, you know, my philosophy as I kind of live this earth is, I feel I'm pretty easygoing to get along with. And I don't know what my vision is in life. I know that I'm constantly pursuing things, trying to make the world a better place, trying to make a name for myself, trying to keep creating art and poetry. I know poetry for me is very important. I try and, with my new position as a peer specialist, I try and teach people that poetry is one of the healing arts, and that, you know, one of the things you can do with poetry is learn to cope with any kind of major trauma that you go through. And that's kind of what I've been doing with my life, and that's what I try and teach people. And since I'm in a place of recovery right now, I'm teaching people how to live a life of recovery through art and through other various, like, healthy mediums, you know. And my thing is, when I'm gone, I want to have at least one or two books to you know, give my grandkids, you know, and have them be like, you know, he tried really hard and he tried making a difference in the world. And even if he fell short or, you know, whatever, he really tried. And everything that I've gone through in my life, you know, is a testament of you know, I'm still standing. And I think that's one of the huge things that I keep on going through with my life, is that I'm still standing.
Can you throw a punctuation mark and answer this one question?
Sure, go ahead.
No matter what anyone's story is, and this would be posed to you, but anyone could ask them the same story, regardless of all of the plights that each one of us are born into and have to carry through life, and it's our destiny or our whatever, I think one of the best questions to take that question and bring it to another level is, what do you think your soul lesson in life is? I mean, the one that if you could do it now, you won't have to do it again, whether you think there's another chance, another dimension, afterlife, soul, whatever, which most artists have a soul understanding. So the question is, what do you think your soul lesson in life is? Because that's kind of like what I did. I took my grandfather's, I took mine, and I merged the two together. I'm not him. I'm not trying to finish his story or his soul lessons. But that has created a path forward into the unknown always by always asking myself, what is my soul lesson in life? That's kind of how I get at and get through each next unknown day and little thing. So what do you think of that question? What is your soul lesson in life? It's a big one. You don't have to answer on the radio here, but what do you think? That you want to go? You want to take it? You want to see if you could take another inch with that, or
I mean, it's such a deep question that I have to think about it. But my soul lesson in life, I realize when people around me get sick and die, and when, you know, people, you know, just leave a party and go missing and things like that, and just, you know, things are just so so volatile in the world, and anything can kind of just happen in life, that you know, every day that I'm still standing is kind of you know, my victory is how I look at things. I don't look at myself as a victim at all. But I guess my lesson, if my life lesson, if I was to learn everything, would be to be myself and to not listen to other people and let them guide me in a way, because it's happened, you know, way too many times before. So I go back to things that I regret in my life that people told me I couldn't do. So I was like, okay, then I can't do that. And, that's one thing I'm trying not to instill in people, that not to listen to people who say you can't do things. So if my one life lesson that I haven't learned yet is, and the thing that I have been doing is through everything that I've created, from everything I've created is from rejection and from being an outsider. So that's how I created my own path. And whether it's Oddball Magazine or the Oddball Show, I mean, the Oddball Show is just a voice, is a platform for me to speak my mind, you know, and bring interesting guests on. And I've cultivated good friendships with, you know, like Prof and Chad Prento and Ivan and all these people, because we go on the show and we talk to a guest and we have laughs, and you know what? I feel good afterwards. I feel like I've done something. You know, I'm working on Oddball Publishing right now, and although I have books that I really think are very good, that are ready to go, that I have a book that I am ready to publish. Right now I'm publishing other people's poetry because I want to do that, because that's what I want to do. So, you know, I guess that's kind of how I'm looking at things, is if my one life lesson my life lesson is to not listen to people who tell you you can't do things. And I think that's the reason why I am where I am. And it's not because everything that I've done has been by accident. You know, I didn't mean
imperfections.
Yeah, I didn't mean to build Oddball Magazine, and I didn't mean to build a community around Oddball Magazine or to leave a legacy. All I remember is being picked last in gym class and people telling me I can't play basketball. And those were the things I liked to do, and people told me I couldn't do it. My parents were getting a divorce. And all these things sound like, you know, whatever. And I just started this Oddball Magazine. And what I really wanted to do I wanted to wear a jersey and I wanted to play basketball. That's what I wanted to do. But instead, I used what I had, which was my coping mechanisms, which was writing poetry. And back then, poetry wasn't very popular like it is now. Like, people are fucking superstar poets who I don't think are very good, but they think they're fucking awesome and they become these great poets. And all I did was I used poetry, because poetry was the thing that, like, if I didn't do it, I would die. Like, 100%. It caused me and it kept me alive. And that's what I instill in my poetry. So I guess my life lesson would be to, to pave my own way, but to want to pave my own way, not be forced to pave my own way. And right. I feel like I've been forced to pave my own way because I've been rejected.
You know who my favorite artist role model for that whole story you just told is?
Who?
Patti Smith.
Okay.
Patti Smith is an ideal role model. She has just lived the life, walked the walk, talked the talk, and she has fallen and gotten up. She's managed to go from the bottom to the top of her soul, if you know what I mean. You know? She's a great writer. She's a great speaker. She's a great humanitarian. If you ever listen to her lectures, I think even now, I think she's just coming into her own as a lecturer about who we are, what we are, and why we are. You know, I really look forward to watching the swan song of Patti Smith, because that's an amazing story. And how about Prof? You got a story, Prof? You're going to drag you into this?
No, I mean, you can drag me in, but we're actually coming down to the end of our time here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to answer that very question, what my soul question is, on our intro for our next show, for our listeners and for all our fans out there. I'll make sure on our next show to come back with a real solid answer for that.
It doesn't have to be solid. It's got to be true.
but yeah, we are coming down to the end of our...
Doc,
Sorry, go ahead.
I did want to mention that the one little thing is that there's a lot of stuff I didn't talk about, but just to get it in there, I did do a comic strip once, and it was called Speaking of Asses, and I actually made, I think, the very first assumentary. I don't know. I'm laughing at my own jokes. This is disgusting. I know. For some reason, I wrote it down on a piece of paper that I wanted to mention that that I did those two things, and maybe I could. And then one got published, but then the magazine died. It was a radio. Maybe I could send that in to you if I could dig it out of my archives. But it's a little cartoon. Basically, it's two parentheses with a crack in the middle, having a conversation. And then, it's pretty low ball. So I think that you know. That'll be fun. Remind me to get that to you.
All right. Prof, you want to take it home?
Well, this has been a very live discussion, Cece. We really do appreciate your time and your energy and opening up to your story, man. I mean, there is we've had a lot of guests in the show. There are very few with that electric, really, energy that we've seen in that. I mean,
you all have our faults.
You can't fake it, and you can't you can't pretend it because you're on a radio show. You know, that comes out from somewhere deep in the soul. So we are big supporters of everything you do here at the Oddball Show, and we want to see I want to come to one of your lectures. I want to know when I can show up for an autodidact lecture on
our world. Find a teacher, book me. If you can get me a cheap paid gig, I'll do a free one for somebody, a class that can't afford it.
Right on.
It pays for my gas, nice. Pick me up and down. In exchange for a little letter saying whether they liked it or not, that's my offer to you.
There you go. You heard it.
Basically putting you to work. It's not an offer. I know what I'm doing. But at the same time, you're invited to this thing that you created. And it could be one of your little JP Line productions.
Right on, man.
So if you're listening out there in the
food,
world.
Food, as long as I can make it up there and back and one step closer to food, clothing, and shelter, I'm good.
CCR Chagra is offering to, if you're listening out there, CCR, and you find what CC has been saying is riveting and intelligent and something you want to bring to wider listeners, CC is offering his services to any kind of school that is listening who thinks that a lecture like CCR Chagra would be, I think if you're listening and you are a teacher who wants to bring a guest speaker into talk to the about art and
kids don't like being lied to, and that's something that I won't do.
Absolutely.
I won't lie to them, and I've done it with fourth graders, fifth graders, and sixth graders when I was in Washington, and that's an amazing experience there. And
you heard it. CC is offering his time and energy.
College, community college, whatever. University,
high school, university,
any subject.
He'll talk, and he will do it for free at first, and then he will.
Well, one for one. Give me one that covers the cost, and I'll do one that on the same day or later or the next day, or if I have a couch to crash on, I'm good.
There you go.
Come on.
That's from the artist's mouth, from the hand of God. There it is. CCR Chagra. And Prof,
think you got any got nothing up my sleeve. I love that line too.
Prof, I gotta say, CC, you've been a fantastic guest on this program.
I love you guys. Thank you. I'm humbled.
Absolutely. Prof, I know you wanted to take it home, so why don't you take it home for us?
Well, I was just gonna say the Oddball Show is a our normal kind of close out here. Our Oddball Show is a collaboration between Oddball Magazine and JP Line Productions. Please do come check us out at our various websites. We have a lot going on at each, especially Oddball. They're up every single day with the dopest poetry on the Eastern Seaboard. There's a lot to check out here, and we've added a bunch more. We're putting up all the topics we've talked about in our pertinent link section, so you can check out CC at all his various outlets. You type in CC Ashagra into Google, and you will be setting yourself on a path of content. But definitely check them out on YouTube. And I know your SoundCloud is super active, and the Facebook site for your Press 22 Publishing has everything for the ID spoken word album. CC, where are the other places that we should definitely send our listeners to find you?
They should send me to somebody who will help somebody like me market, manage themselves, because I just keep creating projects and then I move on. So I'm not the best one to answer that question, but I did start arshagra.com. It's up, it's running, and it's about going strong at about 20%.
Right on.
Stuff. I set up the format, but then a friend of mine's life changed and he was building it, so it's where it is. So anybody who wants to help an artist out, you know, if you know an artist that you know, they don't have a third arm. You know, they're that downhill skier and they need somebody to swim for them.
Yeah.
You know, like I said in the top of the show there. And so if there's anybody that wants to support an artist, help them maybe figure out a Kickstarter type thing or a Patreon thing. Anyone, not just me. If you know somebody who's creative and they have, you know, they got two arms and one leg, and if you could only give them a leg up, you know what I mean? And that's, I think, the best thing that someone can do as far as following me. Arshagra is a clean Google, Arshagra. It will take you down many paths. I have about 6 or 7 Facebook pages. Most of my projects are I create and then, you know, and then they make it to the 80-yard line, and I'm still learning my lessons, and here I go. I'm in a self-love mode. All my friends are telling me self-love. That's where it's at.
So that was CC Arshagra. You can find him at arshagra.com. Funk Physics on the internet.
YouTube, and then Cultural Communication Arts is my video page.
Cultural Communications Arts is his video page.
Yeah,
and you can check out the Genetic Rights Arch Project on YouTube.
Yeah,
Google
genetic,
Press.
The genetic rights in my name, correct?
Absolutely, and he has a resume for days, folks. If you want to Google CC Arshagra, you will understand the man.
I'm right, living Prof? Proof you could do this much and make no money.
Well,
I love it. I love it though. This is why you got to be willing to it's got to be in you. Otherwise, you're going to compromise and start making art to what people want and need just so they'll like you. You know, what I learned just going to Club Passim's in the 80s and 90s, it was amazing because the talent from all over the Northeast would come to this premier open mic for folk singers, and they were the best in their town, in their high school, in their region, and they would all gravitate to Central Square, Harvard Square, and Club Passim's on Tuesday night to wait for their one song in the round, and it would be booked to the tilt to just play, and they would be up against every other person. And it was really interesting to watch which ones came in as phenoms, one after another, just another Joan Baez and another Bob Dylan and another, one after another. They came in with the talent, the heart, and the soul, but the politics of becoming famous and important and liked, and before you know it, their talent actually went down over 2 or 3 years. Very few survived their own ego.
Absolutely. That was CC Arshagra. CC Arshagra is talking about everything the funk
being
physics.
Being born, living, and dying.
Being born, living, and dying. And CC, we got to say thank you for being on the program. It's been a pleasure having you.
I love you. Absolutely. I love you guys. Thank you for this opportunity. I hope I made a fool of myself in a good way.
Oh, you have. You've dropped nothing but science this whole time. So we're running down to the end of the hour. I want to thank CC for being on the program. Prof, thank you for your excellent co-hosting.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Prof. You were kind to me all the way. Thank you.
I do what I can.
It's always a great, great, amazing thing we have here at the Oddball Show. Before we go, I just want to take you out with my Jagged Thought for the week. The poem is called Meditation Lights, and it's Jagged Thought 175. You can find it this week's Oddball Magazine. And after that, I'm gonna sing a lullaby and say goodnight. So, everybody, it's been a pleasure being on the Oddball Show with CC, and after this Jagged Thought, we're gonna say goodnight. So here it is, Jagged Thought 175, Meditation Lights. In the wake of my madness, I have found a shining light. In the shining brightness, I am never blind. In this electric shock, I have found my Jesus. He signals ahead and lets me know I'm alive. Lets me know that my heart beats blood of Mannix, the blood of saints. The simplest poem, the one I never wrote. A coffin quote, a Lowell poem, or Bruce Lee, be like water, wind of mystics. Wave whispered, beauty can never tame this beast in me. And for that, I am electric, shocked back to sleep. And that was Jagathot 175 Meditation Lights. And I want to say thank you to CCR Chagra and my co-host, Prof. We'll see you next week. We'll be back with the one and only Eliza Williamson from the National Alliance of Mental Illness, and we're going to talk more about life as we know it. So thank you. Be good to each other, and we'll be seeing you soon.
Thank you, Prof. Thank you, Jason.
All right. Good night, everybody.
This is the Oddball Show, a podcasting collaboration of Creepy Live Productions and Oddball Magazine.